All right, people, welcome back to another episode of the True Tone Show. I'm your host, Amante Hall, where I interview interesting people in truth and have conversation in tone. Today, I have a soulful R&B singer, Dylan Reese. His attention to detail and songwriting are impressively sewn together to make a nice tone. You like that? I said tone. Hey, I'm so excited to have Dylan Reese on with us today. Dylan, how you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. I appreciate you having me on the show, man.
Yeah, so you have this ability to put such great rhythm into your music. And we're going to talk about that a little later, but I want to dig into the beginning. Oh, before that, though, I want to congratulate you. Congrats on being on Vibe Magazine. What was that like? How do you feel?
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, that was cool. I was able to connect with one of the writers there. Her name's Maya. And, been in touch with her for a little bit, been sending her music back and forth, and yeah, my new release, Shut Your Mouth, sent her the press release and all that, and she liked it enough to include it in Vibe a few weeks ago with a handful of other talented artists, so that was an honor. You know, that's a place where I always look to find new music and, you know, just things about culture and whatnot. It was cool to be included in that.
Yeah, it's always awesome. Does it feel weird to get asked questions that get later put into something like that?
Honestly, no. And I think it's only because I've been doing this for so long. Yeah. A lot of people,
10 years, right?
Maybe
10 plus.
Yeah, at least. And a lot of people might just be getting hip to what I do. I don't know if you're one of those people, which is obviously totally fine. Welcome to the family. But I think a lot of people think that I'm a new artist because it might appear that way, and I look younger than I am. But yeah, I mean, I've been doing this a long time, so I'm kind of numb to certain things, and I'm comfortable in a interview setting, and then also just, like, you know, having certain things be public. I've gotten used to it.
Which is, I wouldn't say that that's normal. It's rare, particularly when I get to talk to individuals that do this for a living. They kind of don't like it, but that's good to hear. Let me ask you this. So growing up, you were obviously inspired by music. Can you talk about having such deep roots and appreciation for, like, the artists at Motown? Can you talk about what is there a moment? What was the thing? Was there a performance you saw, or you were just like, oh, I love Motown and I want to kind of emulate that in my own way?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think I must have been 8, 9, 10 years old around there. I was really young. And this is back when I had a Walkman, like a CD player, you know, like you got to open it up from the top and put in a CD. I know kids don't know about this. They're like, what are you even talking about? I had one of those, and my parents got me a bunch of CDs for Christmas, like maybe 3 or 4 CDs with the Walkman. And I was like, all right, I'm about to jam this on the bus or whatever, like, going to basketball practice. And I was super excited to have that because, you know, it was different times back then. You didn't always have access to music right at your fingertips. So it was like a cool thing. And I'm actually having a hard time remembering what the other CDs was or what the other CDs were, but there was one that was filled with, like, Motown's, like, greatest hits. It was one of those, like, compilation CDs where there was, like, double-sided, mm-hmm. and there was, like, 45 songs in there, and it was all Stevie Wonder, some Temptations, Marvin Gaye, you know, the list goes on. So that just ended up being what I was listening to all the time. Didn't even know what it was until I would, like, nerd out about it and read the inside of the pamphlet and the CD and be like, who's this guy? What's his story? Who wrote this? When did this song come out? And I just, like, got into the nerdy aspect of, like, learning about it, and I just loved that music. Something about it just spoke to me. And then as time kind of went on, I got super into hip hop, I think, as we all do. Maybe not all of us, but I certainly did.
Yeah.
And when I started making music, I was only rapping for a long time, like, before I discovered that I wanted to and could think. And I was just really influenced by early 2000s hip hop and even stuff before that. I have albums worth of songs out there where I'm just basically impersonating Big L and Dipset, like, trying to rap in that way. And I just have no business, like, coming across that way. But that's what spoke to me. And I think over time, those two kind of worlds just blended, and I've kind of created my own sound, hopefully, with all of that, just like a melting pot with all that type of music, you know?
So, Dylan, you have this appreciation for, like, Motown, you have appreciation for music, and then you add in basketball, where you went and played college ball for a little bit. And
yep.
Did you grow up in a family that loved music and sports? Were you a rebel in this way, or was it something that your family, like, you know, pushed you in?
Yeah, not at all, actually. It's funny, my whole dad's side of the family, they had a lot of brothers on that side, and they all played hockey. And
wow.
I think I got on the ice when I was like 6, and I just fell on my ass, and I just knew that wasn't for me. So I was not into it at all. I grew up playing baseball and basketball,
mm-hmm.
but as I got older, I just got gravitated more towards basketball, and I think a lot of that came from the way that's integrated into like hip hop culture as well. Like there's always that thing where hoops and rap are synonymous. So like that's just kind of the world that I gravitated to. And I fell in love with the game at an early age, and I'm only 5'7" and I'm white and I'm slow. So I knew
it's a bad combo.
Like, I'm going to have to put, not for that. It's not good. So I was like, I'm going to have to put in a lot of hours and dedication into this game and into the craft and figure out how I can help a team if I want to play in college. And that was my ultimate goal. And things worked out where I got to do that. I know I played Division III. It's not like I was, you know, an all-American basketball player, but
no, it matters.
At my size,
it matters.
From where I'm from,
yeah,
it felt like the biggest accomplishment in the world.
It is.
At that moment. So, yeah, definitely wasn't pushed into it. And as far as music goes, I think my parents, especially my mother, always grew up, grew up playing music in the house, but there's no like musicianship around. Like there's no one that played in bands or played instruments or sang or anything like that. It was just kind of, you know, I got locked into the rap world and bought a little microphone and was recording on, you know, free software in my room, like without anyone knowing, because I was just trying to figure out like, how do these guys make these songs? Like I wanted to figure out, you know, can I do this? Like, you know, I was just really like locked in my own zone. There was no like outside pressure to do that. I think it just kind of happened naturally. And on both sides, like over time, I just got obsessed with most things. And, you know, to this day, I literally just finished playing pick up at the gym near my house, but I almost didn't make it back in time. So I'm still sweating right now.
So who was an inspiration for you as a player? Maybe it was an NBA college player. Like who sculpted that?
Well, I was a big Kobe fan, and I'm also from Massachusetts, so everyone around me is Celtics fans, and everyone hated me, but Kobe's like, that was my idol growing up. Obviously, I didn't mold my game after him or anything, like,
yeah.
You know, we were built a little bit differently, but as far as the small guys, like Allen Iverson, everybody used to call me Jason Williams, but I think that's for obvious reasons. There was a guy named Jimmer Fredette, if you're familiar with him.
No.
He was like the man. He played at BYU in college.
Okay.
Played a little bit in the NBA, but he was just a short white guy. He scored like 3,000 points in college or something crazy. People used to always say that because when he was a senior in college, I think I was a senior in high school, something like that. So he was just like hot at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, optics is just like, oh, that's that guy. But, yeah, I don't think we really play like him.
So let me ask you this, being in a dominated artistry sport, we'll say like R&B and hip hop, do you feel like your music is appreciated because you're white? Do you feel like it's underrated? How do you cause those are parallels with playing basketball, cause basketball is dominated by a lot of black people as well. And you kind of get that look like, bro, you can't play. Like, but you have to earn it. It's one of those things in culture where the roles are kind of reversed, where outside parties or people have to kind of work their way to get respect. Do you feel that with your music?
Yeah, 1,000%. And I think it goes on both things, like you said. There's definitely a parallel there. And I think if you're able to prove it and kind of give like the opposite effect of like what people think you're going to be, then I think it actually works in your favor. Because, you know, I step on the court or I step on stage in a crowd and they're like, all right, this is an R&B artist. Like, you don't look like an R&B artist, you know? Yeah. And then they're like, what the hell is this? Like, what's going on? And then if they hear me and they like what they hear, then they're like, I think more likely to go talk about it or tell somebody, it's like, yo, there was this little white dude that was singing his ass off and I did not expect it. So I think sometimes you get even more attention because
it's an advantage.
Out.
Yeah.
And I think there is like a piece of privilege in that sense. But if you don't prove it in your mid or your even worse, if you're bad, then you're out. You're just not coming back. You know what I mean? Like, because early on, I had shows early on, like 2011, where I was still doing the rap thing. I was opening for Schoolboy Q, mm-hmm. and I just got booed off stage. Like, it was like one of my first shows, because it was, you know, it was like an all black crowd. Schoolboy's first show, one of his first tours. I come up there, I'm a little skinny white dude with a snapback on, and big earrings. Like, I'm like a Mac Miller like clone, and they're like, get this kid the hell off stage immediately. Like, I didn't even have a chance, but my songs weren't strong and I didn't know how to present myself on stage. And like, I didn't know how to combat that. I was just like a scared little kid. So it didn't work for me that day, but I learned how to, all right, let me show these people what I got. Wait,
so Dylan, and let me ask you this. Sorry to cut you off. Yeah. Cause you said there was a lot of good stuff in that and I want to stretch on it. So you're on stage, you perform, it didn't go the way you wanted. Yeah. You get booed. Why go back?
Yep.
What made you go back?
I'm glad you said that, because I've talked about this before, and I think that was a very pivotal moment in my life where I got off stage, and you would think I'd be like sad and depressed, like, man, that was horrible. That was the scariest thing ever. And you can ask, you know, my best friend was with me there. He was like my quote unquote manager at the time. We had no idea what we were doing, but you know, he was with me backstage, and he was like, he said himself, like, I was sad and like really heartbroken by that. And I was not. I was like, well, if that's the worst it's going to be, then I can deal with that. And it's like, I know how to tackle it differently. I know how to approach this in a different way moving forward. So like, I did a lot of rough shows coming up because I had to. I'm from a small town in Massachusetts. Like, I'm taking every opportunity that comes my way. There's not a lot of tours that come through that part of the country. And obviously I only had a local fan base to begin, so it was like I had to create my own thing and like bring out my own crowd and prove it to those people, even if they didn't know who I was, if they were just friends of friends or whatever. So I had a lot of rough shows coming up, and I think I got really good at proving it to a crowd, whether it's like talking in between songs or like telling a joke here and there, like engaging with the crowd in a way where it makes everybody in the room feel comfortable. It's like, if it's not going well, or if like, say there's only 15 people in the room and it's supposed to be 300, that could be real weird, and a lot of artists just put their head down and get through the songs and move on. But I make sure I get all those 15 people to engage and at least give me a chance, give themselves a chance to have a good time that day, you know? So
yeah,
it was
just like
a lot of battles, you know?
I feel like a lot of people wouldn't understand what you're talking about. Unless you've been in front of people, it's different than sitting in a booth. They are both difficult, but performing in front of people is handling a lot of energy. Sometimes fans can be, or audiences can have too much energy, and you got to learn how to surf. And then sometimes there's no energy and you got to learn how to dig, you know what I mean? So it's this battle you have, but it's really impressive because even though, like, when I watch your music videos, particularly for Shut Your Mouth, or I see some of the older videos you have, you seem to take shots. You're not afraid to take jump shots. You're not afraid to take risks. You're searching. And I like that progression in an artist. And what do you want your music to say? What are you trying to say with your music?
That's a great question. I think that's the question I'm constantly trying to find the answer to myself. I think I've always came from a place of authenticity. Like, I don't want to ever make songs, especially as I grew up and like, you know, any of the stuff that you've actually heard, I was already in that mindset of like, let's give my actual perspective or something that I've gone through or something that I think about or lean into what my strengths or weaknesses are and try to write about that. Right. So like, whether it's good, bad, sad, happy, I try to make it always come from an authentic place, because that's the only way I've ever known how to write and express myself. And at the end of the day, like, I think that's all I can do. I think that's all anybody can do, unless they're signed to a major and they're in these like songwriting camps of like, we have to make a song this way for this type of thing because there's this X amount of budget or whatever it is. Like, unless there's a certain goal for a song, which, I mean, I've written certain songs to like sync or something where that's like kind of a different approach. But when I'm working on my music that I'm going to put out myself and like tell my story, that's going to be a part of my discography and feed to my fans, I just want to make sure I'm giving a piece of me, whatever that means in that moment. So there's songs from 2017, 2018 that I don't necessarily connect to now because I'm just a different person. Like,
yeah, the progression.
I've grown up a lot since then. But I know at that moment that was authentic. So I'm happy that that exists. And, you know, those are some people's favorite songs from me still to this day. And I think a lot of artists, like, take offense to that. They get mad at that. Like, my new shit's better. Like, you know, but.
What do you mean by that? Explain that. How to.
I have a lot of artist friends who have songs that are popular from 2014, and then they drop something now that's like fundamentally better sonically. They're performing it better, X, Y, and Z. They've gotten better as an artist, and those aren't connecting with their audience the same. And they're like, I wish people would not be stuck in like nostalgia and like my old stuff where my new stuff is better. Like, why don't they wake up and see that?
Yeah.
But my perspective is, you can't necessarily tell someone how to connect with a piece of art. It's kind of up for interpretation. And once it's out in the world, it's not yours anymore. Like, it's, people are going to take that for what it is.
Plus,
so I just feel lucky that people are listening to my song, you know?
Yeah. And you don't know what they were going through and how that is tied into their story. You know what I mean? So I definitely could see that. Let me ask you this. I've always wanted to ask our artists this question. How do you guys balance, or how do you, Dylan, balance what's saying too much and what's saying too little when you're making your writing songs? Like, how do you balance that?
Just in terms of like what the lyrics are and like the story.
Yeah, like how do you balance that? Like, this song is done, or this lyric is done, or I said too much. I feel bad about that. Like, how do you balance that?
Honestly, I've never felt like, oh, I said too much, if it's coming from an authentic place and I know it's something I want to say.
Okay.
But I'm also not in the mindset of like, because I might be wrong, but it kind of feels like you don't want to say anything bad about someone else in your song, right? Where it's like, I rarely am speaking from that place anyway. And I'm just okay with sharing things that are personal to myself. Like, obviously I'm not going to like drop my mother's name, or like, you know, if I had kids, like, I wouldn't like, you know, talk about that specifically, but there could be something stemmed from that that turns into a song. And to me, like, that's just another, it goes right into the, you know, expression and the authenticity. Like, if it's something I'm going through and thinking about, I want to speak about it. And I think if I'm sitting down in front of that mic and I'm writing, if I feel inclined to speak on it, then I probably should. Whether I like the song enough, like sonically and production wise, for it to come out, that's a whole other thing. But I don't ever want to limit myself and like, oh, I can't talk about that. I can't say this, or I can't approach it this way. I just do what feels good.
So I did a significant deep dive into your music. I definitely, I love the progression. I love the growth. You know, it's very easy to be like, oh, this didn't sound good. But for me, I look at that and say, well, he's still finding it. And you got to this place where you are now. You're polished. You write great singles. Some of my favorite songs, and I'm going to tell you because I took the time. I want you to hear what my favorite songs are. So Bittersweet, Sub Me In, Sweat. I like Deep. I also like Karma, and I do like Nirvana. I did like those songs. It's a lot. I got more too, but I didn't want to keep it going, you know what I'm saying? But
I appreciate you tuning in.
So let's look at the newest song you recently dropped, Shut Your Mouth. When I heard that song, it's such a tone setter. It's smooth. It gets your attention, you know, smoothly. It's not just this bright sound. And the first thing I thought, and hopefully you don't get offended, is you got to figure out how to get John Mayer on that mug. We got, I don't know.
Straight up.
Like, I don't, it just screams John Mayer. I don't know if that's, like, maybe you could play guitar, or maybe y'all could do a remix. You know, if you're listening, John, do it.
Trust me, that's not going to offend me in the slightest. John Mayer is somebody that I've studied for hours and hours, just in terms of the way he arranges songs. Obviously, he's one of the best musicians of all time. Like, he's a wizard on the guitar. But the way he chooses melodies and puts it all together, there's a lot of just little parts that are like glue. And there's not a lot of artists that I study and try to take from, and he's one of them. So I'm not mad at that at all.
What was your thinking behind this song? Like, what came first? Was it the sound? Was it the lyrics? What came first in Shut Your Mouth?
Yeah, so that was produced by my boy Matt. He produces a lot of stuff with me. He did Deep with me, Sub Me In as well. I have like three guys that I work with, like, really close together, and sometimes we all work together on something. Just kind of depends on what's needed. I feel like everybody has their certain strengths, but Matt's someone I grew up with in high school, and after high school we connected. Great keyboard player, just a real talented guy. But he lives in Massachusetts still, and I'm in LA. So he works at a studio as an engineer, and every so often, like, you know, we'll do sessions in person, obviously, like we did Deep together in the room. But yeah, every so often he'll have some time and he'll be like, yo, I just wrote these chords, like, it's four bar loops, but just wanted to send you these kind of chords and sounds and see what you can put together. So I do all the arrangement. He just sends me, like, essentially four bar loops of, like, different instrumentation, drum, bass, keys, and then, you know, we'll build it out from there. So I had just the chords at first, like the first sound that you hear when that song comes on. And I was like, yeah, this is something. So I just kind of loaded it up, started mumbling stuff. The melody came to me.
Yeah.
That hook line, where, you know, I'm singing real high right in the beginning, right at the top. And it sounded like such a sweet, like, sultry song and vibe where I could almost say anything on there and it would sound good. Yeah. And you could very easily write something corny lyrically, but it would still sound soulful, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, let me not do that and let me think about what would be interesting to say. So I thought of the title first, and I just said to myself, I think it would be so cool to have a song called Shut Your Mouth over, like, something that sounds so sweet and, like, genuine, right?
Yeah.
It's like very wholesome vibes, but when you read the title, it looks like an abrasive record that's like,
here? You think it's gonna have some bounce, if that makes sense, versus some smoothness.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, basically, I started with the title. I'm like, how can I flip that and get this to make sense? So, the record's basically like, you love somebody so much that you don't even want to hear them say it because it should just be understood. It's like, don't even tell me that. Like, we're already showing this to each other every single day. I don't want to hear it. Like, shut up, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's actually a very sweet thing, but it's like said in a way that you would never say out loud. So I just thought that was a cool, it's just a different thing, like a different thing to write, a different style, you know?
Dylan, real quick, the music video, when you're working on visuals, how do you, like, cause I love visuals. I'm a visual person. And when I watched the music video for Shut Your Mouth, the visuals, like, it's this, you know, first of all, where is it set at? I couldn't figure it out. Like, where is that at? Where did you, like?
I was in Palm Springs, California, middle of the desert.
Okay, yeah. So this you got this desert backdrop. You have this tone with the colors. Like, how much detail are you thinking about that? And I know some artists do take a lot of time in it, and some are like, I'm cool. You can feel that with this, that you took your time, that you're like, all right, let me get my visuals right. What was the thinking behind that?
I'm really glad you said that, and I appreciate it. I don't know if you know this part about the video, but I actually shot that on my iPhone.
Wow.
And edited it myself on my iPhone. Like, that video didn't even touch a computer or, like, editing software.
Wow.
It was just an idea. So I'll start with that, because I'm going to give you a little inside scoop. I had a completely different idea for this video once I made it.
Yeah.
And I was going to go for something super, like, juxtaposition, almost like what I was saying in the beginning of this, where, you know, I wanted to feel, like, abrasive and sound different. So I was going to shoot this video like a DMX video with, like, pit bulls on chains, and I'm, like, in a tank top. Like, it looks like some hard, like, hip-hop, like, big-sounding drums and all that. Yeah. And then you turn on the audio, and it's like, what the hell? This is something completely different, you know? So that was my initial idea. My videographer that I normally work with, his name is Kirk Cedric, one of my best friends. He's been with me since I moved to L.A. 5-6 years ago. He was just so booked up, and I'm happy about that, obviously. You know, he's part of my team. I want him to thrive and do his own thing.
Yeah.
But I was like, all right, this video is going to take some planning. Definitely going to take a little bit of money. I got to rent some dogs or, like, find a drop top or something. And I'm like, honestly, I don't have the money for this, and I don't have the time to wait. I got to drop. I just felt a little bit of pressure. It was a few months since I put out Bittersweet. So I was going to the desert anyway for a friend's birthday party, and I thought to myself, I have an idea where if I get this desert, I can get this red tone, red-orangish tone, because I also do all my cover art. So, like, I have that graphic design background where I was like, I know I can achieve this color if I just get one shot that feels like how this sounds. So I actually went the opposite, and I just wanted it to match the way it sounded. So, yeah, shot it. Literally had, like, 3 takes with my iPhone, just performance. I had one slowed down. So I shot one of the takes with the song sped up. So I was performing at double time. And then by the time it gets back into the software, I'll slow it down halftime. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I'm following. It sounds really cool.
So it's slow-mo, but, like, but my mouth is on time.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm singing on time, but my body's going slow. And I thought that would be cool. So, honestly, the footage that we shot on my phone is not good. Like, it's literally not. It doesn't look cool at all.
But that's okay,
once
though.
I put it together, yeah, yeah. But once I already knew I knew how I was going to put it together, and I saw the video before I even edited it.
Honestly, yeah.
I had the shots, and I was like, I know what I'm going to do with this. I'm going to flip this one sideways. I'm going to put this type of texture here. Like, I saw it in my head. It was kind of just one of those moments where it just worked out. So I got back, put all the clips into this app called CapCut that I've been using to just do, like, short form content. And I'm like, why can't I edit a whole video in here? Let's try it. I did it one day, done. Like, and it was ready.
Yeah, that's incredible. I'm always for, well, the thing that stands out in what you said was you were going somewhere for your friends, and then you were like, yo, this is it. We're going to do it here. Let's just do it. Yeah. That's cool.
In the shot.
Yeah, but that's where
the shoot was 15 minutes, you know?
That's where you get the uniqueness and the beauty, and you know what I mean? You gotta pay attention to the moment. And I think artists are very good at looking at moments, you know, and they're able to see pockets and where normal people, their muscles and eyes aren't really trained to see that. I wanna go back and talk about something real quick. So I'm really big on the studio vibes, and you know, it seems like you say you do a lot of your recording at your house or at your studio. Is that important to have, like, uniqueness for recording? So, like, I know you're probably familiar with Rick Rubin. He talks about taking bands who always recorded at a house, and they would get drunk and they never really could focus on the music. So he took them to a mountaintop to perform. And it's like, whoa, that's different. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's some different stuff. And it kind of rejuvenated them to make some more gold from the soul. How do you do that in your environment, in your studio?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think if there's artists that are listening to this, I think there's a lot of takeaways, like, for this part specifically. To me, it's important. I think everyone has their own process. And like I said, I started out by having no idea what I was doing. And I was just recording in my, you know, bedroom when I was 17 years old. And I just was, like, firing up recording software, had no idea what was going on. So I'm most comfortable alone in a room where, like, the setting is controlled. And I'll also say this. I know you said, like, sometimes people aren't as focused or they're at home because they're hanging out or, you know, they're chilling. I treat my life as like I work a 9-to-5 in my head. Like I have hours where I know I'm doing certain things.
Yeah.
Like once 5-6 o'clock comes around, like I'm not answering texts. Like I'm clocked out. I'm hanging out. I'm watching basketball, hanging with the homies or my girl, whatever. Like I'm like very regimented in that way. So I know like in the morning, I have certain things to do. I might have phone calls to take, certain things to do. Like I said, I'm doing graphic design stuff too. I'm managing a couple different artists as well. So like, I always have a plate full of things to work on. But I know like when I have time and I feel a creative spark and I have something there, I have it right at my fingertips, right in my home. I have a room dedicated just to my studio. It's the only thing that happens in here. This is where everything happens. I'm the most comfortable. I don't have like crazy expensive equipment. Obviously I have professional equipment and I know how to use it all now. Like I've been doing this for a long time. So yeah. I'm very comfortable with what I have and what I can do with it. And then also the process to get things finished in a way where I'm really excited about them. You know, outsourcing to another engineer that I just know is better than me. Cause for years I was mixing all my stuff myself too, and just putting it out.
Yeah.
And like, don't get me wrong. Like it was probably 85% of the quality was there, but now I know I can outsource that time, spend some money, make sure I love this. The production is going to be exactly what I want. So like the process to me, it's very important because I just have access to it and I have control over it. Like I have a lot of friends that like want to go to the studio and whatnot. One, you're spending money all the time. That's not the vibe.
Yeah.
So there might be people in the other room that are loud as hell. Or like, there's random people in the back of the studio, like drinking and smoking. Like it's not what you want to be doing on that day. And I never want to be in that situation because it's going to ruin my creative, like immediately. I'm going to be thinking about who's this girl sitting in the back of the room. I don't know her. What's she thinking about? Why does she sit? Like, who is that? Like, what's she going to think about the way I sing this note? Like I'm self-conscious about it. I'm just not comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
So very important to me, but I know artists that can go anywhere and just make bangers, like just pull up to any studio with anybody.
Yeah.
And they just got that charisma and talent and they just show up and they're in the booth and it sounds amazing and they just move on, and you know, but I'm not that guy at all. I need to be in my setting where, like I said, I have control and I'm comfortable, and you know, I can light a candle and drink a coffee, sit down, the lighting's how I want, I got a fan on, I'm cool, like everything's great, you know.
Yeah. So let's
I have to prioritize that.
Let's switch it up a little. We talked about studio. Now let's talk about what happens in the studio, collaboration. And you've done a lot of collaborations. You've done collaborations with Paul Wall. You've done it with the great legend Music Soul Child. You got a lot, you know, particularly on the song Jaded with Paul Wall. He doesn't really do a lot of, you know, features or collabs, and you were able to get that as well as Music Soul Child. Can you talk about you know, doing a song with Music Soul Child, and what did you learn? So there's two sides. There's a side where you actually work with them, then you imagine working with them, and then it happens. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, totally. First off, yeah, like you said, I've been lucky enough to work with some people that I looked up to my whole life, even before I was an artist myself. I was listening to Paul Wall and Twista and Music Soul Child and all these cats, right? So it's a privilege to be not only on the same record, but just in that conversation in any version, you know? My takeaway from that is I think a lot of artists limit themselves into like, they don't know like what's actually possible because they're like, yeah, how am I going to find Music Soul Child? He doesn't know me. Like he's not going to want to do this record, which is probably true. But he definitely won't do the record if you don't ask and you don't do a little bit of legwork and be a professional and just shoot the shot, you know? Because all those collabs you're talking about, it's not like I have a big-time manager and he got with Paul Wall's manager and he's like, listen, we got to make this happen. This is what we're doing. It's just, I literally made that song and I was with my homie after and I was playing it and I'm like, wouldn't it be insane if this was a Paul Wall verse and I had an open verse on the record? And he was like, I mean, yeah, of course, that would be great. So I'm like, okay, let's see if we can find him. And I just go on the internet, find his manager, found his manager's number, texted him, shot him a text, like, you know, real professional, just like, I've got a feature inquiry, here's the record, I'd love to be involved, if you guys are interested, let's talk. He hits me back that day, get on the phone with him, it gets done. Like, I had the record done in, like, 3 days. Like, that's a rare occurrence, obviously. And obviously, I'll say this, too.
Yeah.
For every time I've tried to collab with someone that's, like, outside of my network.
Yeah.
For every yes, there's, like, 100 no's.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you can list all these people that are like, yeah, you worked with this person, you worked with that. And it's like, yeah, well, I've tried to work with
such and such,
this, and they just ghosted me or told me it was going to be $50,000. And, you know, I'm just like, okay, well, I can't do that, you know. So it's always just the way I look at it is like, if you ask, the very least you'll have information of, all right, this person doesn't want to do features or isn't available or that wasn't the right way to hit them up. Or this is what this costs, and now I know. Like, you can kind of just know context. Or it's like, all right, this person's reachable. And you'd be surprised, like, yeah. Some of those I got for free because they like the song, and they don't know me. They're just like, this song is dope. Give me a percentage of it. Let's go. Like, you know. But it doesn't necessarily make logical sense when you're just like, yeah, you're just a dude in your house, like, cold emailing people. But sometimes it works, you know. You just got to be okay with hearing no. And I think that's why a lot of artists don't get the opportunity to do these things, because they'll be like upset or take it personally if people don't want to work them or they're trying to charge them a certain number. Like, I'm a businessman. I get it. Like, there's nothing that someone can tell me if I'm asking you for something that's going to offend me. Like,
yeah,
you could just say, nah, I don't like this. I'm like, cool. Well, good. I'll send you another one in 3 months. Maybe you'll like that one, you know? But people would be like, all right, like, screw this guy. I'll never hit him up again. He doesn't believe in me. Like, that's just like a bad mindset, you know?
Yeah. And so, sometimes they don't even run the things. They don't even run it. Like, you know, hitting someone up on IG, like, sometimes they don't even run their accounts.
Totally.
And it is hard getting in touch with people, and you have to have a thick skin. And maybe if you can't do it and if you're getting frustrated, it might be a sign that you're not the one to be doing it.
And also, it's the approach, too. Like,
yeah,
there's artists that, even for me, like, there's people I slide in my DM, they're like, let's work. Like, you're not going to get a verse from me if you just say, let's work. That's not how, like, you got to come with some context, come with an offer, come with something, like, bring something to the table and, like, be a pro. So I think there's also that. I'm a professional. I know how to speak to people. I know how I want to get approached for things. So that's how I do it when I'm reaching out to other folks, you know?
Dylan, let's talk about Music Soul Child. You did a music video with him. The visuals were good again. I really enjoyed that. Did you get when you are working on the music video and the song, talk about how that came to be. Did you get to work with him in the studio, or was it, you know, a situation like with Paul Wall where you sent it in?
Yeah, so I sent it in. I couldn't find his manager. And when I made that record, I knew it was like, this is the one that I want to send to him for sure. He was really hard to get a hold of, honestly. It was like a pipe dream. I was like, this ain't going to happen, but we're going to try. I found his publicist, who is not the correct person to ask for a feature inquiry, which I knew that. And I said that in the first sentence of the email. I'm like, listen, I know I'm hitting up the wrong person, but I couldn't find anything else. I just made this record. I think music would love it. If you're cool with passing it along, great. If not, totally get it. Have a great day, whatever. I didn't hear back for like 4 months, so I just had that record sitting there. I'm like, I'm going to do something with that. Maybe I'll finish it. Maybe I'll get somebody else, whatever. This publicist hits me back, and she's like, I love this. I'm forwarding it to your manager. Forwarding it to his manager. Sorry, I took so long. Once again, got on the phone with his manager. His manager is actually from Boston, and I'm from Massachusetts, so we kind of connected on that. He was like, I don't hear anybody from Massachusetts that's making music like this. This is super cool. He was telling me how, you know, he kind of dove into my catalog a bit, and like, you know, they just genuinely like rocked with it. So it was like a crazy moment. And
you had to be, were you freaking out? I mean, that has to be insane. I mean, come on.
Big time. Big time. I couldn't believe it. Because also, mind you, like, it's 4 or 5 months after like I made the song and like had that idea. So I'm thinking that's dead in the water. They saw that.
So are you holding the song? Sorry to interrupt. Are you holding the song until you hear? Because you could have released it, right?
Yeah. So I had only one verse because I knew I wanted to get somebody on that and like make that a moment. Music was just my first choice.
Yeah.
So I had so much music at the time. Like, I wasn't in a rush to finish that song. I was like, something will happen with that. I actually have one right now like that, that I've had for like 2 years.
Wow.
And I'm still waiting for like the perfect moment.
Man, quit playing, man. Drop it. But, you want to drop it on here?
I know.
You want to play it right now?
Everybody's telling me that. But it'll align, man. I always trust my like intuition on stuff like that.
Yeah. No, that's good. Do it.
But yeah, music like the record, he cut it in Atlanta. I was in the studio with him and they sent it back. I jumped on a Zoom with him and his manager because I mixed the record and we just went over like mixing notes and like that was surreal because I'm like sitting on a Zoom like Music Soul Child's like telling me, yeah, I love the way you did this. Maybe took this vocal, try it this way. I panned, you know, this background vocal this way. You could hear it in the reference. I'm like, this is so cool to like work in this way. Even though I wasn't in the room, it was still like just a creative like meeting of the minds. And like I was in that conversation with somebody who's one of my biggest influences, you know.
Isn't that like it feels more inspiration doing stuff like that? It's like, oh man, I want to do
for sure.
Yeah, like that's pretty cool. So now you get to the music video. You're there. Where did you guys do the music video part? Where was that?
So yeah, this worked out, and this was on a fly, and it just happened to work. It was like a perfect alignment of everything. So one of my best friends and my roommate at the time, his name is Steve, he runs a company called Five Star Vintage. He sells like vintage clothing. He has a store out here in LA. Started online, like we played college hoops together. So we were at the dorm room, like thrifting clothes, all that. So they do this event called ThriftCon. It's like a huge flea market for vintage clothes and things of that nature. And it's basically a traveling festival, like a, like any other like festival or like Comic-Con or something.
Yeah.
So they do it all over the country and he'll do it sometimes. He'll like get a booth and be a vendor there. And a lot of times I'll go help him just cause I'm into that stuff and he's a homie or whatever. So it's fun. You meet people, the whole deal. And they had that event in Atlanta. This is after I had the song done. So Kirk, guy I was talking about before, does all my visuals. Steve also hires him to come shoot content for him when he goes. The family function over here, you know? So I'm like, all right, you're going to Atlanta. Kirk's going to be there. You do Soul Child in Atlanta. I'm going to maybe go to ThriftCon and help you. Let me hit up music and his manager and all that and see if they're down to just come jump in this music video because we're going to be in Atlanta. So I hit them. They were like down. I'm like, well, I'm going to book a location so we can have a place to look at. I'm going to pay for everything. All you need to do is pull up and just give me 2 hours of your time. We'll shoot a couple shots, get some photos. I won't hold you guys for any longer. We'll edit it, all that. So I just made it as easy as possible for him to like be involved. And we went to his city, like, and that was kind of by accident, but yeah, we flew into Atlanta Friday, got settled Saturday, shot the entire video. They pulled up. Again, took 2 hours with them, took another two by myself. We shot the video. Bam, done. I'm ecstatic. Sunday, we do the thrift event all day from, you know, 5 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Yeah.
Fly home Sunday night back to L.A. And then me and Kirk are just sitting there with footage like, yo, I got the – not only do I have a record with Music Soul Child, but I have a music video and, like, we have a bunch of photos together. And I got to, you know, obviously meet him and talk to him in person. And they were just, like, showing a lot of love to me, which, like – just unexpected and like super cool. Like they didn't need to do that, you know. Like they were just like, yeah, let's get it. Like you're gonna come here. I think they just saw me as like a young dude who has the right perspective and is setting things up in a way where, all right, this guy could do something. And like they were treating me like a peer, which just felt great, you know.
Yeah, wait, hold on, because real quick.
I've had a hundred other situations where people treat you like shit because they got a certain amount of listeners or followers and like, everybody's like, yeah, who's this dude? Get him out of here. You know what I mean? So like,
no,
it's
yeah.
always great when that happens.
How do you, and now you answer what I was going to ask you, but how do you manage that? Because that is very frustrating. You know what I mean? Cause you got to be professional, but also there's also this space for human, you know, where egos get involved where you're just like, dude, you know, you were me at one point or they were me at one point. Why are you, you kind of acting this way? But sometimes it's, you know, they're having a bad day or whatever, but it still doesn't, you know what I mean? It doesn't give a right for someone to act that way, but.
Yeah. No, honestly, like there's been a lot of times where I wanted to react differently than I did, but you know, I'm from the East Coast. I'm very resilient. I just chalk it up to, all right, this dude's whack. These people don't know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
I'm better off without them, like, actually having a relationship. We can get the work done. It can be transactional. We're still running the business here. We're still going to, like, use this situation to our advantage and, like, you know, be professionals about it and see it through. But, like, I know we ain't going to reach out to you again. If you reach out to me for something, I'm all set. You know what I'm saying? Like, good luck. So, yeah. You know, when that happens, you kind of just have to take it on the chin and just move on to the next thing and make the most of the situation. But with, like, the music situation, I'm still in touch with his manager. You know, even Paul Wall, too. Like, they were super cool. I got his number. Like, I feel like I could text him and not necessarily ask for a favor, but, like, he respects me enough to, like, oh, I remember this dude. Like, you know, and that's, like, those situations you want to create, which is why I always talk about those two right at the top, because not only were they, like, iconic moments for me personally, but they're, like, valued relationships that I built out of thin air just by asking for something and, like, getting what I wanted from it. Like, you just never know what you're going to get, you know?
Did music give you a piece of advice or, you know, did he point you in a direction in that encounter?
Not really, honestly. He was very, he was definitely giving flowers, and I was obviously doing the same. Like, you know, I told him, you know, he's one of my favorite artists, but he's definitely very, he's kind of quiet and, like, to himself, but, you know, he showed up. They showed up on time. They were super professional and all that.
Keyword, no, on
it,
time.
It wasn't like a, yeah, man, but bro, you don't even, people be 4 hours late. Yo, my bad. Yeah. You know, I was trying to find parking. It's like, bro, come on. No, there wasn't anything, like, advice-wise. I think I took things away from that situation, like, that I've already spoken about, but it wasn't, like, a direct, like, hey, you should do this, you know?
And you've been on tour. I mean, you're used to this. You've been around people. You know the highs and lows of ego. Like, what was your experience like with John Bellin?
Man, all right, you did a little digging there. I like that. That was 2014, and at that time, John Bellin was my favorite artist on planet Earth. I was, like, super early in his journey and, like, all the behind-the-scenes videos he used to drop. Like, he was a huge driving force and my inspiration and, like, the way I thought about making music early on, especially when I was transitioning, like, from doing the rap stuff into more R&B, like, pop space. Like, that, he was, like, got my mind thinking in a completely different way. And it was insane. So, like, that was his first show on his first tour ever. And I was the opener for it. It was in Boston. That was when I was in college. I was going to school in Boston. And I always remember this. I was sound check. I was at sound check. I was there early, like, with my band, my DJ. And I was sound checking a song. And then him and his crew came in, and they just stood in the back of the room and just watched me perform the whole song. They were just staring at me like, nobody's on their phone. They're just, like, watching me like, all right, let's see what's going on here. Like, and I was, like, nervous as hell because I can see them all looking at me. I'm like, oh, yeah. I didn't know this was about to happen. So, you know, I finished sound checking. I'm like, great, sounds good. I walk right over there. They're like, dude, you sound fantastic. This is going to be an amazing show. Like, they were all just, like, the most wholesome, like, friendly, welcoming group of individuals like that I've ever met. Wow. And I remember before the show, like, John was just like, dude, thanks for being here. Like, thanks for opening for me. And I'm just like, bro, like, thank you for having me. Like, this is great. You know, like, it was in a sold out venue that I had nothing to do with at that time. Like, it was just like, yeah, you guys just put me on this show because you liked it. Like, they had no incentive to bring me into this. So the fact that he did that and then also was thanking me for coming, that says all you need to know. Like, John is the best.
Have you tried to do some music with him yet?
Yeah, I mean, shortly after that, definitely. I was in touch with his bass player, Dre, and I think he still works with him to this day. But after that show, I was kind of in touch with him. And they came back around on their next tour during my senior year of college, and they invited me to come hang out at that show. It was like in an even bigger venue. I didn't open on it, but I came backstage and, like, hung out for a bit. So, like, I definitely knew them for a pocket of time, but as things kind of moved forward and like we kind of did our own things, like got lost in the shuffle. I'm not in touch with them anymore, but I mean, if I ever, I just have a feeling if I ever bumped into John or Dre now, they would, it might like take them a second to like, yo, I remember this dude from Boston. Like he was like one of the first people that opened for us and I remember him, you know? So hopefully that happens, but I mean, yeah, that'd be a dream collab for sure.
That's awesome. That's a powerful story. I read that you are really big on boundaries, and as an artist, that can be hard because schedules and things, you know, flux all the time, and you try to take time out to rest. How important has that been for you, and how have you managed your boundaries, and how have they changed?
Yeah, great question. You did some research on me, man. Where'd you find a tweet or something with that?
No comment.
Guys, young Nardwar over here. Yeah, so I think like almost setting boundaries within my own like brain and like what my own habits are like came first because when I first moved to LA 2017, you know, I'm younger, I got nothing going on, I'm trying to figure it out, I'm saying yes to every opportunity, running around the city, going to parties because I think I'm going to meet somebody, going to this session because who knows who's going to be there and what they could, but I was just like scrambling, trying to make stuff happen and put pieces together and just learn stuff and, you know, you're just a young, hungry artist and I never took like time off and I just felt that wearing on me slowly. Of like, all right, dude, like you're trying to build this career and like trying to do something, but also like you're going to drive yourself insane and you got to take a time to reset, you know? So I found myself hitting these blocks of like creativity would just stop out of nowhere because I never took time to reset. Yeah. And I'd be like motivated and in the studio trying to work in something. I'd be like, I got nothing to say and I suck at this. I suck. Like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
But once I kind of learned to, again, set boundaries, I now, like I said, I treat this as a 9-to-5 at this point. Like, when it's time to clock out, I'm clocking out. And that's just what it is. I need to take that time to reset. On Sundays, I don't do anything. Like, literally nothing. I don't leave the house. I'm watching podcasts, watching documentaries, playing 2K, like, whatever it is. Like, I'm just like, I'm not working. I'm not thinking about this. I'm going to order some food, chill. And then like, then Monday morning hits, I feel good. I'm ready to grind. I got a million things to do. Eating clean, we're working out, doing our thing. But like Sunday is just the time to just let it rip and just like not worry about anything. And that's been really helpful because I feel like every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I'm like hitting the ground running. I'm ready. And I know once Friday hits, I'm tired. I feel a little bit burnt out, but I'm like, I'm going to play basketball in the morning. I'm going to chill on Saturday, go hang with the homies or do whatever. And then Sunday I can clock out and I'm like, I look forward to recharging, you know?
Yeah. That's amazing. Something you said,
I think that's almost like the opposite of some people because they might work a day job or whatever. And it's like a bit monotonous and they're like, okay, just got to get through this. And then the weekend we can turn up and rage and party and do our thing. But it's like, I'm putting all that energy into the work that I do. Right. So like, I'm trying to build something and it's not easy to do. So I need all of that. Once I have it like bottled up, I can put it into things that I'm prioritizing and things that are important to me, you know?
Earlier you talked about starting off as a rapper and rapping and then getting into singing. Like was there someone who told you like, yo, you can sing, bro. Like, why are you playing?
Definitely not. No, cause I couldn't sing at all.
You couldn't. So you don't, do you think you have a good voice? You don't think you have a good voice now or?
Now I know I have a good voice.
Okay, so what happened that made you was like, oh, I can sing, or I can get there?
Blind and irrational confidence, just like a lot of things I've done.
Sounds like basketball, huh?
Exactly. Like, there was nothing you could tell me when I was 15 that I'm not going to the NBA, you know? It's like, oh, what about the fact that you haven't grown since you were 12, or like you're slow as hell? Like, doesn't matter, I'll find a way. I'm going to the NBA. So. Yeah. I think when you think like that, I think I think less like that now as an adult because I have a lot more perspective. But when you think like that, you're going to you know, you hear the saying, shoot for the stars, land on the moon, something like that. So it's like, because I thought like that, I was able to play Division III basketball and, like, earn a scholarship and, like, do that part of what I was trying to do, right? If I didn't think like that, I would have not made it there, because I wasn't good enough naturally to, like, get to that point. I was not given the tools and the gifts to just land there. I had to grind my ass off just to get to that point, you know? And I feel like it's the same way with my vocal and music making ability, because I don't know how to play instruments. I don't really have interest in learning how to do so, because I've already surrounded myself with people that are great at what they do, and I can lean on them and collaborate. And like, I've built a team to help me get to the final product. I know that I'm a great songwriter because I've put tens of thousands of hours into that. And within the past like 3 years, I felt really good about my vocal ability, but it's only because I've been trying to sing like Usher and Justin Timberlake and Music Soul Child and D'Angelo and all these guys since I was, you know, 21, when I sucked bad and I just sound horrible. I was able to save up some money and buy autotune. So like, that honestly taught me a lot about what to do and what not to do. And I think I always had the feeling, because I knew I liked certain things, like going back full circle to the Motown stuff, I knew what I was trying to go for. Like, even if it was on different type of production, there was a certain level of like soul and like just a different cadence that was, I knew I wanted to come out of me. That's something I was gravitating towards, but vocally I didn't know how to do it. So I just practiced, like singing a lot of covers, stuff like that. Like, just try to sing it exactly how he did. Use your ear. I know I have a good ear, and I don't know anything technically about music, but I've just come to the point where I've done it so much that I trust my instincts, and I just lean on that heavily, you know?
What are you listening to now? What is Dylan having his, like, we go in your car or something, or wherever you listen, what are you listening to?
The truth is, like, almost nothing.
I'm not shocked.
Yeah. I don't know if other artists have told you that too.
Yeah, they have.
It's kind of a sad thing, honestly. And like, this might go like a whole different direction, but when you're young, right, and you fall in love with music, you fall in love with it, like at its core, like at its face value. You're just like, I love the way this makes me feel. This song got me through this. I connect to the lyrics. I love the way this, you know, the chord sound, whatever it is. And then you work your whole life to get the opportunity to make that what your job is. And then once it is, which it has been for the past, my entire adult life, because I just didn't take no for an answer. then it's your job. And I very much look at it that way. And I think I've lost some of the ability to enjoy music at its face value, because I'm always thinking about, when a song comes on, I'm like, why did they choose these type of drums? Or
the working brain, you know, kicks in. The working brain
This is in 3/4, rather. Like, I wonder what went to that. Oh, I would really like that background vocal. Who wrote this? Let's go back. You know, so I'm like picking it apart scientifically, trying to study it and learn from it. And it's very few times where I'm just like, damn, this song feels good. I love this. And I just want to jam and sing along. Because it's hard to turn that off. So if I'm not working on music or working with artists, like talking about music and stuff, I like to listen to podcasts and comedy, and I'm a huge Hoops nerd, as we covered. So I'm listening to like all the sports talk shows and like really tapping out on like my job, you know?
I see. You're pulling from other sources other than what you dominate in the field you're in. I like that.
I think I have to, in order to like maintain my sanity and happiness, because those things are all just making me happy, and I like them for their face value, because I'm not a comedian, so I can just appreciate this. Oh, this is a funny podcast. I like the way these two banter off each other and they're just saying silly shit. So I like it, right? I'm not, if I was a comic, I would be like, oh, how come he chose this word? Or like, I wonder why he used this type of voice, or how come they're not talking about this instead? I'm not thinking about it like that, because I don't do that. Yeah. But when I hear music, I'm in my like editor mode, and I'm like, God, that's so annoying. I wish I could just listen to the song and like it, you know?
Yeah, that's good. What What's a motivational quote? What do you say to yourself? It could be a quote. It could be something that you're encouraging yourself to do. What's something that you say to yourself?
I don't know if I have a quote that I say, or like, I think I've always been driven by being in control of my time, and I want to do everything in my power to maintain that privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a job before. I'm 30 years old.
It's not and old. It's not old, bro.
I've been hustling and been in that mentality since during college, during high school. Like, I was like the barber on campus at my school. So like, people are going to class, I'm in my room, like, cutting people's hair for $10, like, in and out. Everyone on campus, I'm cutting everybody's hair. So like, that was just like, this is because I don't have to go get a part-time job or like do a work study while I'm in college.
Yeah.
So like, this is what I'm going to do. And I just always have had that entrepreneurial thing. Like, even before my music was pay my bills, after school, I went back to my parents' house, built a studio in their basement. I was like the local engineer for everybody within, you know, a 30-mile radius. So like, that's how I saved up money to like move out to LA and like go figure it out and like
take
some risks. And I've always just had this like, I want to be my own boss in some sense, or at least be in control of my time and not have to worry about punching the clock or like doing things I don't want to do. So I think naturally I have this level of like resilience and drive and motivation to keep that, because although I've been successfully able to do that all this time, I still haven't made it yet. Right. So like, it still takes 50-hour weeks just to stay afloat and invest in myself and, you know, go do these things. Like, I want to go on tour. This costs money. Like, this is what I got to do. Right. So yeah. I think I naturally just have motivation in me. Like, I'm not someone that waits for opportunity. Like, I go create it, you know?
That's awesome.
So I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for, but
no, it is. It's good stuff.
I just got it within me.
It's a mindset. You don't have a quote because you have a mindset and you have a will. So you go get it.
And I also want to say that I've been lucky to have that, because
yeah.
I found out something that I wanted to do very young. I was 18, 19 years old when that flip switched in my head. After my freshman year of basketball, it set in, oh, I can't go play shows and like do my thing and like try to build this while I'm playing basketball, because it's like a full-time job in college. And it kind of took me by storm. So I played that freshman year and I'm missing opportunities to go work with this person. And I didn't put out any music that year. And granted, I wasn't good at music, but I was used to putting out music when I was in high school. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how am I going to build this if I'm hooping? So I'm like, all right, I'm done playing basketball. I'm going to spend my last 3 years during college to just learn, figure this out. So by the time I graduate, I have a job or like a way to maintain my life. Right. So like, literally, I think that moment is when it was just like, all right, I have to do this. Like, there's no like other route. This is what I'm doing. I'm just locking in. So if you have that, it's easy to stay motivated, because what choice do you have? Right.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't find that thing until either very later in life, even if it's in your late 20s, you don't naturally have that perspective and mindset, like you said. So you have to like tap into it, where it's like, I've been there for so long. It's just natural. And that I consider that lucky, because I didn't choose it. It kind of just happened that way. And I've just been in that mode this whole time, you know?
That's awesome. And when you said that, and I thought about this a couple of times, you know, Big Sean has that lyric, I guess overnight success makes people forget about 10 years of hard work. And
exactly.
I hear that a lot. And I feel that when you were talking, and you know, that it's impressive, man. Like, I'm a fan of you. I think you have some great work. I can't wait to see where things continue to go. You're definitely a professional. If you get paid for anything, you're a professional. Like, so,
yeah, yeah.
So, I definitely appreciate you coming on the show, man. Real quick.
Yeah, man.
If you ever come to Ohio, you better hit me up so I can come check you out live.
Where in Ohio are you at?
I'm closer to Cleveland.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been to Cleveland once in 2018.
But if you ever come here and you on tour, you better let me know so I can come check it out. Or
yeah,
let me know. I'm definitely going to come check out whatever you're doing. But yes, what sir. You're getting ready to drop an album. Have you decided on a name, or have you, cause I didn't see that. Are you going to release it shortly or?
Yeah. I've had the name for over a year. I've been working on this album for like basically when I dropped Deep.
Yes.
So I think that was April 2022.
Mm-hmm.
That was when I started working on this project, and I'm like, I'm just going to give it away slowly, build some hype, get more people involved. Cause I also went through this like little transition where I took all of my rap music and like hip hop stuff that I was doing over the years, and I put that on different Spotify, different Apple Music. So like, I have a Deep catalog under another artist page, and that artist is called Ellis, which is my middle name. So I still put out rap music and hip hop. I just do it over there. So when I did that and I dropped Deep as the first thing, I definitely made an effort to kind of put myself more in the R&B world because I knew that's where I wanted to live. And I knew that's where I belonged. I think over the years, I just got caught up in like saying yes to every opportunity because I'm independent and I need to do things. Where I was like, oh, I'm doing rap songs, pop songs. I'm touring with reggae bands. I'm doing R&B albums. Like, I need to, like, make this a little bit more clear. So I feel like I started over in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just juggling both careers. Like, they have their own goals and own things. So it's very cool and it's very fun.
No, it sounds amazing. Yeah.
Since I've dropped Deep, that's when I've kind of been working on this project. I have one song I need a feature for. And a couple mixes, and I feel like I'm done. A lot of that music is already out, and it's the songs that you were kind of talking about. So, mm-hmm. This album is going to be filled with songs that you already know and love by the sound of things. So, I'm not going to leak the title just yet, but I got it.
I was fooling, man. I was trying to get music. I was trying to get a name.
I see you.
Hey, man, well, I appreciate it. Where can people find you?
I'm at Dylan Reese Music. On all platforms, DylanReese Music, Instagram, Spotify, all that. I'm easy to find. I appreciate you having me on. It was a great convo. I can tell you definitely did some digging. Sometimes you do podcasts, like interviews, like blindly. I know we haven't really connected before.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just like very surface level and boring, but this is fantastic. So I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, thank you, man. It means a lot. I try to, like I said, I want to be a professional too. That's my goal. I got goals too. So you got to take everything serious. And I try to have quality. Yeah. I go for quality, not quantity. That's my goal.
I can tell.
I appreciate it, man. Hey, thanks for coming on, man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, people. So that was Dylan Reese. It was a great conversation. He was awesome, great artist. Go check out his music on Apple Music or Spotify. He's on IG. It was a very, very good conversation. And as always, was there truth to this conversation or was it just noise? I'll let you decide. This is the True Tone Show. I'm your host, Amante Hall. Till next time. Do